Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Well, today is a great day for us. We have here not only Robert Knott, staff writer and associate editor of the Posse Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican. We also have Craig Smith, who is a staff writer and classical music critic for the New Mexican. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good morning.
So we did this a few years ago, and we're doing it again today, which is talking about what it means to write about the arts, what it means to do criticism, what it means to write about the local arts, the national arts. And I wanted to get started in asking you guys both, what is the function of criticism at its best, and what does it do at its worst? They're pointing at each other.
Whoa, that's why I wanted to introduce Craig Smith. Take it away, Craig.
I would say that criticism at its best is helping people understand how excellent something was, how exciting something was, what kind of good work people are doing, and luring them to come and experience the arts for themselves. At its worst, it's literal, feeble-minded, narrow-minded, cruel, and full of inconsistencies. Of course, Robert and I always write the first kind and never the second kind.
Being that we are human beings and we are so perfect.
You have to
put the art in context, what it started out to do, whether the people putting that piece of art together achieve that goal, what it does for that specific company in terms of their canon of work, and you know, basically I would back up with what Craig said.
Well, here's the thing. If it is to lure people to see this marvelous work of art, you have to have that marvelous work of art in the first place there for you. In other words, the way you're talking about criticism, it's only good criticism if the subject is good in the first place.
No, the subject, the criticism can be very good if the performance or the art is not really up to par, too. That's one of the most important things a critic can do. It's like having your own self-monitor saying, I need to take my walk today. I need to watch what I'm eating. I need to breathe and meditate, or whatever it is one does. A critic is important in helping people realize where the bar should be placed. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, and I'm, in fact, glad for this invitation, because I worry that the bar in Santa Fe, the critical creative bar, is set way too low by many organizations. I have the feeling that groups perform or do their art in a way that's good enough to get by, but not as good enough as it should be. And that, I think, is one of the most important duties of a critic, is to keep things up to the level where they should be, even if you can't make people do the work that you feel they should or that the industry say thinks they should. You need to point out, with 10% more work, you could be 50% better. Why aren't you doing this?
Well, it's interesting because you really draw a distinction between, for example, the role of a movie critic, because a movie critic just is not going to make a difference into what is coming out of Hollywood movies or Iranian movies or whatever, but a local critic actually has the possibility of affecting the local art scene.
In terms of box office?
In terms of, I mean, as Craig says, encouraging them to do better work.
Well, you're right about movie criticism because, you know, certainly Hollywood doesn't care what the Santa Fe New Mexican or, for that matter, the Albuquerque Journal or the Santa Fe Reporter thinks, per se. Whether it has any impact on the local box office of cinemas, I don't know, and I don't think anybody cares that much. But, you know, I disagree just a bit with Craig on the point, although I think basically he's right, because I think one thing that's difficult for a critic is evaluating the work in front of you based on the fact that it is, in fact, all over the place, from amateur to professional to semi. You don't always know the story behind how they put that piece together, but you're still asked to figure out a way to convey in 500 or 600 words what it is they were trying to achieve and whether they achieved it. You're also seeing it, and Craig and I talk about this a lot, on a specific night. Live performance is different from a movie. You can go back to that movie 6 months later on DVD and change your opinion. It's the same movie. You can go back to a piece of visual art on the wall and change your opinion. It's the same piece of visual art. But that live performance piece, and this is one of the exciting things about it, is going to change night to night. And you may really see it on what is called a quote-unquote off night, just as well as you might see it on a good night. And sometimes I think the performers know this.
I think that's true. And part of the thing is that that's why I always suspect someone who calls me and says, I disagree with your review because I saw it a week later and thought it was completely different. Then you can say, well, I appreciate that, but you probably saw something completely different than what I saw. But the thing is, Robert, when you're dealing with music and theater especially, and dance for that matter, you have some basics to go with. You have the script, or you have the score, or you have what the choreographer has done. You need to know what the style is. You need to know if people say the words right or sing the right pitches, that kind of thing. So at least you have a template to work with. Painting is a little harder. You can look at something and say, oh, what painterly handling of placid surfaces. And listen, I don't understand what that means, and I think a lot of people don't.
Well, there's a huge, what should we call it, bullpoo factor.
Unfortunately, that's true. If you speak in words that sound right but mean nothing, you can get away with all kinds of things.
And people do.
It's true. I think Robert and I try not to do that as critics. We try to say what we feel. And yet we have to sometimes express things in ways that are hard to follow. You say that this orchestral chord felt to me the way a wonderful hot coffee tastes. And through that, perhaps you can get someone to click on something in their own experience.
Click on something. That was an internet metaphor.
Oh, was it? Yes, it was, wasn't it?
I think still a critic is only as good as the art he's covering. I think it does impact what a critic does. You know, if you using movies as a really simple example, if you see all the low-budget stuff, you're only going to be as good as that stuff is in a way. I really believe that, and I think that's true of art in any form. If you're seeing art that's all over the place, it opens up your ability and your experience to convey what you're feeling about that. If you're seeing really high-class stuff continually, it's going to make you a better critic.
True, but you can also try to write as well as you can all the
time.
There,
I agree. And you do have to be a good writer, or if you're a radio or a TV critic, you have to be able to articulate what you're feeling, and that's another vital part of it. But I think we both are good writers, even if our criticism falls apart sometimes. I think we can both convey ideas well, and I don't know if readers agree, but...
Well, thanks to our copy editors, we're sure that extraneous adjectives, if you'll excuse me, have been removed and things of that nature.
References to some inside thing that we don't know exactly what they're talking about, but that's okay. We're talking to Robert Knott and Craig Smith. Now, both of you are artists and creative people as well as critics, and you are a musician, Craig. Robert, you are a playwright and actor and director also, so... No, doing these things yourself, how does that affect the way you see the work that you criticize?
I think it's an important part of being a critic. I don't think it's a necessary part. I'm really glad we both have those backgrounds. So I've met critics who are very good at their job, who stumbled into it, who started writing when they were young and became very good critics. And certainly a book critic doesn't need to be a book writer, and a film critic doesn't need to be a filmmaker. But I think it does sort of imbue both of our work with a sense of inside knowledge. For me, on the one hand, I think, as Craig pointed out, it allows me to say, I think this bar could be held a little higher. But at the same time, I understand the problems that groups face, theater groups face, behind the scenes that we don't always see. I understand what can go wrong even if you have the best cast, you know, a few days before rehearsal. I can understand when a director gets frustrated, unable to bring out a performance from an actor. And it's not always an easy thing to see on the stage. So I think mostly... It informs what we do. I mean, would you agree, based on your background?
I would. I think it's really valuable to have been on the other side of the footlights, as they sometimes say, to have worked as a fundraiser and administrator. You understand the problem that goes into it. But I do believe that either you can feel when someone is working hard, or if they're a good enough performer, they may not feel it, but they'll project the feeling of it. I think that's what a critic also does, talks about whether the art feels real or not. And something can be...
Feels real.
Feels real.
What do you mean?
Feels real. The moment that you're there, and you're there because you want to be, and you're there, and you're staying there because something is happening for you that is giving you an experience or filling you in a way that going outside the theater won't do. Robert talks about film. I am not a film fan. I don't understand the art form. I recently had to review the new Tim Burton
Sweeney Todd,
and I hated almost every minute of it. I thought it was a desecration of a score. I didn't understand why it was done. And even though it was beautiful to watch in a quirky way, and I admit Johnny Depp is one of those black vampire kind of performers who has, at least in this role, had a very strange kind of temptation to him. To me, it just didn't work. I was interested in the human factor behind it, and to me, it became a bunch of staging for cutting throats in the most clinically disgusting way possible. You know, you wanted to have a handkerchief to put up in front of your face as the blood flew. And yet we were in Albuquerque and there were young people. We were in the very back row and we were surrounded by fans. And one young man down the row said, Tim Burton is God.
And another, you think there was a generational thing going on?
I don't know. What do you think, Robin?
Yeah, I think in that case, Tim Burton and Johnny Depp grabbed people. But his one chilly review was certainly at odds with most critics around the country. But by his own admission, he's not a film reviewer. But in that case, we sent him. But you wouldn't send me to an opera to review. It would be a risky, daring, crazy proposal because it's not my background. And I think that's what he does very well. Another thing I think...
Well, hang on. Do you feel that you didn't like the movie version of Sweeney Todd because it was a movie and you don't understand movies?
No. I could appreciate the art form that went into it. I could appreciate the sheer beauty of the scenes. I could appreciate some very clever stuff that was done when Helena Bonham Carter sang Mrs. Sweeney's, what's her name, Lovett's meat pie fantasy aria.
Did she really sing it?
Yeah. It's a wispy little voice, but in the context it worked. You know, that was beautiful, but I felt ultimately, creatively, it was taking something about a 10 by 20 and crushing it down into a 1 inch by 5 inch box. Hmm. Other people disagreed.
What do you want, Mary Charlotte, from a critic? If you're reading a critic or listening to a critic, what do you want if you're interested in the art form?
I mean, honestly, I want to know whether to not waste my time going to something. If somebody says, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, then I'm not going to go. And I also want them to be honest. I think there's a thing, I've noticed this at times, there is a thing both with critics and with audiences, is that they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And you go to something, and it is atrocious. And there's people, you know, stand up and give a standing ovation. The critics say, well, that was lovely. You're thinking, you know, what parallel universe am I living in where that was good?
Mm-hmm. But that's your opinion. If you're saying the audience stood up, even if Craig and I went to the same show with you and thought, this is atrocious, you can't negate that the audience enjoyed it. That might still mean that you write a very honest, poor review, but you better acknowledge this was a crowd pleaser, which you sometimes do in your reviews.
Mm. Yeah, but there's different reasons why something is a crowd pleaser. And one particular piece I'm thinking of, which shall go nameless, it addressed a pressing social issue of our time. And so I think people were expressing gratitude that this social issue, which usually isn't talked about, was talked about. And so they stood up. But mm-hmm. as a work mm-hmm. of art, it was horrifying.
Well, that's a good point, too. You can say that something has great power, and it's not a work, and it certainly isn't a work of art. Scene from the battlefield, war photos, things of that nature are extremely powerful, but I look at those actually as a push into commentary more than I do necessarily as a photographic piece of art. I do think that Santa Fe has an easy habit of being pleased, at least in music, and people also go and they're excited, they're in a special place, something's happening, people are doing something for them and to them, and they're so excited, they jump up and down. And I'm glad for them, I'm glad they like it. But my job is to stay detached and say, yes, this was moving for them, but you know, you guys played too fast, your scales were messy, and this is not what Mozart intended, for example.
One element, too, that's so important to what we do is that since we're both based in a vibrant arts town, but which is nonetheless a small town, is I think we both have learned over time, because of the number of years we've both been on our beats, what these groups can do. And this is to their advantage, even if they don't like us criticizing them. I have the right to say after 9 years, Theater Work, a local theater company, has a certain bar. And I see when they surpass that bar, when they reach that bar, and when they don't come close to that bar. And they may not like that. And you can switch that out with Santa Fe Chamber Music, Theater Grotesco. You watch enough of their shows. You see where they're really vibrant. Then 1 year they miss the mark. That's really undervalued, I think, in critics, because we do pay attention.
Longevity and sticking with the scene as it is.
Right, because I've seen critics in other papers, frankly, come and go within the span of a year, and they might be more lively and more exciting. They might suddenly be really generous or really harsh. People think, oh, the new kid on the block is really exciting, right. But they don't stick around, and we've stuck around long enough, I think, to both see.
I don't know if that's praise or blame, you know, Robert. You just, we get stuck in the mud sometimes, huh?
Well, I mean, I suppose you could be cynical and say they've been at it too long, they've done it too many years, but I think after a while you get to realize what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, I find this in the theater arena, off the record they will contact me and be really thankful.
Mm-hmm.
That does happen.
That's happened to me, too, from the opera in past years.
You mean if you write a negative review? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will sometimes hear from people within that group saying, you were right, thank you, I'm glad. And, you know, it's funny.
But publicly, we can't acknowledge that.
I spoke with a couple actors the other night, and they both said, we appreciate you telling it like it is because we want to hear it on the outside. But that's not always the case when you're trying to get people into, here we go again,
mm-hmm.
seats. And that's where does a critic affect box office? And I don't know that we do here in town.
Well, that's a good question. Do you? Do you know?
I do know that sometimes when I've written a very positive preview, I have been told that box office picks up. I know that was the case with a series of three concerts this past weekend. I can't say I filled a house, but I do know that happens.
But that's a preview. But what about a review?
Well, it's difficult because most of the reviews we run, except for something like, say, the opera or chamber music or Desert Chorale during the summer, they're isolated events. They're over.
They're after the
fact.
So
what we're doing is reporting on, we're saying, okay, it's like saying, you know, the water pipes were frozen in Santa Fe. Here's what it looked like, and here's why it happened.
Yeah, but they're still frozen.
Not all of them. It took 7 days for mine, but now they're fine. So you're setting pilings to build on. That's what you're really trying to do with a review of something that's over already.
We have quite a classical music scene in Santa Fe, perhaps unique in the country for a town this size. How do we line up against the rest of the country, against big cities?
It's difficult to say in a way. No, it's not difficult. I'm just being mealy-mouthed.
Don't do that.
I won't. Chicago, say. Huge city, tons of money, big organizations, lots of rehearsal time. In that sense, you cannot compare Santa Fe Symphony or Pro Musica, say, with that kind of situation. They have different budgets. They have different sizes. What you can do is talk about how well a work is performed within that context. Like I told Robert, the minimum you expect from a music group is the notes are right, the dynamics are played right, it's played in a way that the composer would recognize, and ideally then the musicians and the conductor do something to make it a little special. Either the love they have for it or a special technical skill. It's a reason not to just be sitting at home listening to a recording. And I think that's the same way with theater. The biggest problem I see in Santa Fe is not enough rehearsal time and not enough real attention. There's too much run-through feeling to me.
And I could say that's true of the theater beat, too. I think most of the groups do not put enough rehearsal time in. There are exceptions, like Grotesco spends 6 to 9 months on a piece. And a lot of cases, I don't know if this is true with you in the classical music, I don't see a lot of theater artists growing over time. They're doing the same thing. They're playing the same notes with some slight variety because it's easy, because directors are not pushing them. And
that's a danger in a small art town, too. That is a danger. You find a comfortable level, and then you suddenly lose that little push. Anthony Trollope, the novelist, said that the best way to learn to write is to put a piece of cobbler's wax on your chair. So you're always uncomfortable. In effect.
Oh, I thought you meant so that you're stuck to the chair and you don't go off.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Maybe he did say that. You should be a critic, Mary Charlotte.
No, thank you. Well, it's tricky business. I mean, with the theater scene in town, on this program, we'll have people who do theater who are putting up this or that play, and I'm very happy to do so because I think talking about the issues that are involved with putting on a play and talking about the issues in a particular play, it's really important, and it's great to do that on the radio. This is not a critical format.
That's
is
right.
Just an expressive format. What are you up to? That said, there is not that much theater that I would go see on my own.
And
why is that?
I think the first thing that's...
And I don't think it's just subjective. I mean, I think that there are reasons. It's that there's perhaps not the quality that there's in other places.
You know, it's interesting, just as background, I lived here from 92 to early 96, and then I left for 3 years. I came back in 99. I've been here since. So just putting that in perspective, I think quantity does affect quality. And in this case, the fact that so many groups have disbanded, moved out, or failed, frankly, financially, or maybe lost their space, has left in the past 2 to 3 years a void. And the less theater there is here in terms of quantity, and I'm going to say again, when I got here in 99, there were about 45 to 50 shows a year. that's dropped by more than half, and I can count them up based on the number of stories I write. Therefore, theater artists don't have a reason to come here. They don't have a lot of different options to work. They don't have a lot of different places to stretch their muscles and have new trainers working those muscles with them. So, again, I think their work becomes complacent and competent. And in many cases, theater here is okay. It is competent. But it should be more than that. It mm-hmm. should be exciting. It should make us want to go to theater. It should make us feel like we're about to romanticize or seduce somebody. And that doesn't happen. And I think the theater artists are in part responsible for that. And you know what? So, frankly, I'm someone like me who writes about it. Ultimately, they're the ones that have to raise the bar or decide they don't wish to work anymore, which quite a few of them are, being very picky. It sort of breeds, you know, competency breeds competency. And the theater artists running groups right now don't want to hear that. They don't want to say, it's me. They have to look at themselves and step back and say, what am I doing that's not working? And they may not wish to hear what I have to say about it, but even so, they need to find peers. And I don't think they're tight. I don't think the theater community is tight with each other in terms of the directors, the artists going to see each other's shows. There are exceptions to that. I know a few people that go see everything, but is that the same with the Class of the Music Group? Do you think they connect with each other?
No,
are they seen as peers?
I don't think so at all. It's an issue that when I moved here in 83, the issue was still going on. It had to do with the concert calendars and trying to get something together where everybody would put all what they wanted to do in one place so you could see what was happening and people could coordinate. There's still calendar formats out there. New Mexico Culture Net has one. There have been others the city has tried and so forth. The big problem is people will use them, but they won't respect a date that's already down. It's on the 8th, the weekend of the 8th coming up. There are three concerts taking place over 3 days, and a couple of them, one's a dance concert, that's not music, of course, but one's a dance concert, there's two or three musical things, and they're all taking place in the same days, or within 1 day of each other. Now, it's a small town, and that's going to splinter audience, too, I think.
What's the last theater piece you saw that you thought was exciting? Can I ask, Mary Charlotte?
Oh, boy. You've put me on the spot. I'd have to think about it for a few minutes. I'm not sure.
Would it be Master Harold? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. That's it. Thank you very much.
That
was more than exciting. That was extraordinary. That was an extraordinary thing.
That's the case, too, isn't it, of a young, vibrant theater person who's really wanting to go places and is working on mounting these things. Because he's still got that the bit of the sacred fire burning.
He's got somewhere to go, and he wants to do it, so he gets pretty good people in place, and he pays them a little money. And now, if he does 2 or 3 years, is it going to be the same energy? I don't know. But that did stand out.
Well, and he's an extraordinary person. And is Santa Fe going to be able to hold somebody like that?
Well, that's a good question. It's true of critics, too. Someone says to me, oh, you found a perfect niche here in Santa Fe. And I feel like some faded old gentleman who walks around with a cane and totters and talks about the good old days. And yet, I live here because I love it. Ideally, a critic should live and work where he or she loves something, not just because it pays a lot of money. Now, of course, if someone offered me a giant salary to go write about dollhouse making, I'd have to think twice about it, I suppose. But you've got to maintain the excitement on the writing side, too. That's what worries me. I feel people go through the motions here. And I feel frustrated like a parent who's, well, perhaps a peer who said, you know, you got to polish your shoes. You've had to do this and that. You'll be so much better if you just do this little bit. And they don't believe that. And okay.
And that goes back, a couple more points I wanted to make is I think a critic does have to be excited about the art form they are covering, and I think they have to want it to succeed. And I do. I believe I do anyway. But you cannot be a blind cheerleader who says, the home team's losing, but we're still going to go rah, rah, rah. You have to point out that the home team's got some problems. The counterpoint to that, which I always like to bring up, and I don't ever get a clear answer to it because I sure don't know, is how we're seen by people, because I don't mind someone criticizing me as a critic as long as I know they're paying attention to what I'm writing and what it is I'm writing about. And I don't find that a lot in the theater scene because, again, a lot of people don't go see everything I see or talk about theater the way I do. And a lot of people are honest about that. I don't want to have a conversation with somebody that's just a Theater Grotesco fan about how I rate as a critic, because they're only looking at me in terms of how I rate Grotesco. And I find that a lot. I find that a lot of the groups have their own fans that rarely cross venues, cross sides. And it gets sort of tough to argue to people that they have to pay attention to us and how we're paying attention to the scene to get a good sense of who we are. So that if they do read the paper, they say, I respect Robert Knott's opinion, or I don't, and I've seen enough of his reviews to know I don't care what the guy thinks, and they have to make their own informed decision, you know.
There's another point that I wanted to bring out, which is that there are many countries in the world that pay a lot more attention to the arts in terms of funding the arts and in terms of knowing that the arts cannot be managed on a business model where you fund the whatever the art form is by the price of admission. In the United States, we're way far behind on that. How do you think that the relative lack of arts funding affects or doesn't affect the quality of art in a place like Santa Fe?
Mm. Certainly organizations that are big or popular have an advantage because they can afford fundraising staffs. They have a long record and this kind of thing. I will point out, though, that that model is changing. Recently, the British Arts Council announced that it was going to cut funding to a lot of theater companies, many of them small children's theater groups, many of them groups that had toiled for years living solely on Arts Council funding. And a number of critics in the United Kingdom now are saying this is a good thing. Why should we keep supporting things that nobody goes to? And they instanced new young groups that were drawing constant full houses in their small theaters and saying, these people are making it work. Why do we have to keep feeding the mouths that don't produce? It is a back and forth kind of thing. Government funding is dangerous, frankly, because he who calls the piper pays the tune, and so the piper really is making the money. I wish we had more guaranteed funding so that groups didn't always have to worry. On the other hand, then you can run into complacency. I know that's not much of an answer for you, Mary Charlotte.
No, it's not really answering the question. I mean, there is that it's a fine line because in Santa Fe, everybody is always having their silent auction and their fundraising things, and one thinks the amount of life energy that is going into simply fundraising, you know, could go into the arts or could go into actually doing something in itself productive if there were just a little bit more support, public support.
Mm. I bet a lot of people out there who go to the art, some sort of art organizations regularly can remember a time in their life when they saw a couple of performers, whether they were musicians or visual artists or actors, in a bare room, not even nice lights, not nice seating, and saw something really exciting happen. Lack of money in those sort of short-term, one-time events. It doesn't really matter if the energy, if the creativity, if the vision, if the excitement, if they're willing to take risks.
Well, Master Harold the Boys is an example.
As are the College of Santa Fe staged readings in the summer, put together in 3 days, and they're bare sets, and there's something exciting about them, even though they got the darn scripts in their hands, and there's not any costumes. But that said, if you're going to have a company going on for a long time, naturally they want to improve everything.
And that model doesn't work for things like the opera or for serious theater or for ballet or things where
exactly.
You need lighting and real sets.
You know, if you called
sets.
It No Frills Theater Company and people got accustomed to seeing really dynamic theater with just a couple of actors in it, if somebody could really pull that off, that would prove to be the exception to that case.
It would, but you can sure dress up something really pretty bad with lots of set hangings and costumes and things, and people are fooled.
Yeah, there are a lot of
taking your
or they're not.
Well, either way, there are a lot of rhinestones out there, really good-looking things that just don't have any heart to them. And again, I always like to ask people a month later, what do you remember that really turned you on? What do you remember from 2007 theater-wise that turned you on? And you'd be amazed at how people are stuck for an answer, unless they are a fanatic of a particular group. And
now, here's another question. How does, if it does, New Mexico's burgeoning film industry affect the rest of the arts, especially theater?
It's a broad question. I don't know that I can answer it, even though I'm writing about film more and more. But if the question is it siphoning away money? Certainly one thing that's happening, based on talking to actors, is they're getting auditions and they're getting a film work.
That's what I'm asking about.
Two lines in a movie, if they have to show up 5 days on a set in Albuquerque, is going to pay them. It's going to get them a Screen Actors Guild card. They're not going to do the play that's rehearsing that month, which means then, yes, directors have to look somewhere else for that talent. And what I have seen more and more in the past couple of years is a reliance on anybody they can get to fill the role, seriously. And they might have some talent as an actor, but they're not really. I'm seeing more and more miscasting because we just want to do this play, so we'll take Joe.
Because that Bill is true. There's a lot of miscasting.
But they can't get Bill because Bill maybe is doing a movie, or maybe Bill's doing something else that pays.
But are there more actors who are sticking around because we have a film industry?
That's also true. They are hoping, and they've got agents now, and they're hoping to get an audition.
And certainly one of the things that's happening is people who work in the technical side, they've always been here, but often they've gone out of state. Now they're here and able to stay more and more. Set dressers, camera people, makeup people, logistics people. I know several people who make a very good living doing logistics and planning work for film. They go scout locations, they do this and that.
if I want to do a show at Warehouse in the autumn, you know, I've done several theater pieces there, and I have a costume designer I want, and suddenly I find out that the movies are offering her a lot of money.
Millions of dollars.
Something's going to change, yeah. So in that case, it is affecting it.
What do you think are the strongest art forms, the most burgeoning art forms in the city of Santa Fe?
We're both just
that sound was my jaw hitting the floor, being asked a question like that.
Well, film is moving to the forefront right now. We'll all see whether it's there in 1, 2, 3, 4 years. I think it's still a strong visual arts town. Our visual arts critic, Elizabeth Cook Romero, is not on the show with us, but she might have some thoughts about the quality, but certainly the quantity is there. We all know that.
Mm,
it's still a big literary town, yes?
It's a very big literary town. The Lennon Foundation moving here made a huge difference. The town is full of interested writers, people who are doing creative work, and they don't really, you know, it's maybe they're writing a screenplay on the side like every other
human being on
born of woman on this planet. But they also are trying to do work they find interesting. They go to small readings, they sit and talk, they argue. They argue about the arts, and they argue about writing, which I think is good.
Do they argue in coffee shops? Can we witness this?
Probably. What do you think, Ra?
I'd like to think so. Craig, do you think dance is having some sort of slight comeback?
I think dance is doing pretty well. This town had a long history of not being able to support dance. Different companies, professionals would visit and fall apart. Other people would start things, and eventually they'd fall apart. When Santa Fe Festival Ballet and Aspen Ballet merged, that has become much stronger. That company has gotten raves everywhere they perform, from Chicago and New York to France and Germany.
I'm going tonight. They are fabulous. They rock. You can sit there and you are transported. You don't have to try to like it.
A noted choreographer who retired here told me the other day that, or I shouldn't say retired, she's still very busy here, said that she likes going to Aspen Santa Fe Ballet because they look for good choreographers and they look for something exciting. So you not only have, well, as one other person put it, Helen Pickett, who did work for this piece, she said, I want to see an interaction between people. I don't just want to see two hot bodies out there moving together. I want to feel there's a story going on. So I think that's one reason they're succeeding. They keep their quality high and they insist on it.
Well, maybe on that note, it's time to go. It's 8:38 here on KSFR. Craig Smith is a staff writer and classical music critic for the Pasatiempo, which is the Friday arts magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican. And Robert Knott joins us, and you're going to stay here, speaking of the arts.
And I can have fun now? I can do shtick?
You can have fun. Didn't you just have fun?
It was a good talk. Thank you.
Craig, did you have fun?
I did have fun.
We did this a couple years ago, and I got a lot of responses from people that really liked the show. So
yeah.
Thanks for having us back on.
No, it's very interesting, and let's continue this conversation.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break. Stay tuned to KSFR. And I'd like to welcome now Robert Knott, who is staying with us, and he joins us just about every Friday for this segment called Speaking of the Arts, in which we talk about what's going on this coming weekend and this coming week.
Thank goodness we got rid of that Craig Smith guy, always raising a bar. Now I have to talk on the radio.
I think he's nearby.
He is.
I detect his presence.
And I am always delighted to let loose now and have a little fun. There is so much happening. I'm going to fly through this.
Besides Barack Obama being at the community college tonight?
Go ahead. What time?
I don't know.
I see. They can't even get the press release right.
Because I'm going to the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet.
That's right. That's tonight at 7:30 at the Lenzic. Mixed repertory. Craig Smith wrote about it in today's Pasatiempo, by the way. That's at the Lenzic at 7:30.
That same Craig Smith?
That's right. Meanwhile, if you like short one-act plays, sit around the bench. It's time for Bench Warmers.
Yay.
The Santa Fe Playhouse's annual series of one-act plays written mostly by local playwrights, 8 o'clock tonight at the Playhouse. It's a gala champagne opening. It's more expensive than the usual price. 988-4262. Story in today's Pasatiempo. Cuentos de la Tierra. Stories of the Land. Teatro Paraguas. They're over to El Museo Cultural tonight at 7 o'clock with some bilingual staged theater performances, storytelling, dance. Sliding scale to get in. I can't say what it is, but I can say that if you're under 16, it's free. You want a phone number? Here it is, 473-0143. On another theatrical note, the El Dorado Children's Theater, their teen players are doing Oliver, which is the musical based on Oliver Twist.
Yay!
7 o'clock tonight, James A. Little Theater. Here's a phone number, 466-4656. So there, right there is just four theatrical events tonight, including Aspen Santa Fe.
And I have to say, the El Dorado Children's Theater can be and is quite amazing what they get young people to do. I mean, if that's the level of theater artists that are coming up, we're in good shape.
They do great musical stuff. I missed their live shows. I'm going to try to go see this weekend. I got to pitch a visual art show I wrote about in today's paper because I love movies. Making Movies is at Monroe Gallery, which is downtown, 112 Don Gaspar Avenue. And it's an exhibition of still shots. There's about 60 in all from movie sets dating back to the 1920s through the 1980s. And Brian Hamill, one of the photographers, he's worked on like at least a dozen Woody Allen pictures. He will be there in person. It's great. If you like movies, go see this. Monroe Gallery has great opening receptions. Usually, they actually hire a security guard and get a license and have liquor. Not that you want to go for that. But anyway, it's tonight, 5 to 7 p.m. Show runs through April. I have a story in today's Passatiempo on page 46. Looking for something to do Saturday? Well, the Dark Room has On Holiday, a group show. It's photographs, reception 2 to 5. They're over on San Mateo Road, Suite O, as in outrageous. Phone number 820-7777. And I will mention also that Tricklock Company is bringing the Revolutions International Theater Festival up here this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday at the Armory for the Arts. There's an array of events. Best thing to do is check out their website, which is www.tricklock.com. What time is it?
It is 8:43 and 24, 25, 26 seconds. Hey, if you've ever dreamed of being in an opera, you have a chance. The Santa Fe Opera is providing an opportunity for members of the community to appear on stage in the forthcoming 2008 summer season. They'll be auditioning tenors and baritone bass baritones for Benjamin Britten's Billy Budd. That's a lot of bees. Craig Smith.
Yes.
Hey, Craig Smith.
I'm back. Hello.
You're back.
There, Robert.
He's,
and Mary Charlotte.
Locating here.
Yes, I wanted to say that not only are they auditioning for extra singers for Billy Budd, they're at looking for child and adult supernumeraries for various operas.
What's a supernumerary?
It used to be called a spear carrier.
Ah.
It's the person who comes on stage behind the hero or heroine. Or if you ever saw the opera Faust, where there are all these soldiers, you keep marching in a big circle behind the stage so you look like a huge army.
Right, right.
But actually, the Santa Fe Opera, as you know, does some really interesting productions, and you might have a chance to do a lot more than carry a spear. You can find information out, I believe, on the opera's website.
SantaFeOpera.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the audition, let's see, the deadline for applications is the 1st of February. The auditions will be held on February 9th at the Santa Fe Opera. Go to Santa Fe. Just says 9th on here, but anyway, whatever. And the SantaFeOpera.org is that they said no phone calls, please, only emailed applications.
Meanwhile, it's Super Bowl weekend, and we're not talking football. Super, S-O-U-P-E-R, Bowl 14 XIV takes place on Saturday. And this is where a bunch of restaurants get together in a soup competition to raise money for the Food Depot.
Yes, we had Sherry Hooper talking about that on the air just a few days ago.
Excellent. And it's noon to 2 on Saturday at the College of Santa Fe's Driscoll Fitness Center. You got to pay to get in. Call 471-1633, and it's a really good cause, and there's soup, so that's Saturday.
And there's soup from some of the best chefs in the city of Santa Fe.
Excellent. Meanwhile, this is interesting. PR 101 for authors. The New Mexico Book Association is going to have a talk led by experts in promotion from 1 to 3 o'clock, also on Saturday, at the Southwest Literary Center, which is on Camino del Monte Rey. You got to pay to get in, and you get refreshments, and it's, you know, if you ever wanted to figure out how to promote your book, I would say go see PR 101 for authors, but you do have to pay a little bit of money to get in there. Here's a phone number, 983-1412. And a lecture you're going to love, Mary Charlotte. Rock climbing in Rio de Janeiro.
Ooh.
I never thought you could climb a rock there. I just thought you, like, went topless
you
and you danced
in the streets.
You just do samba. Yeah. Slide lecture by Sandra Corso. It's 5 to 6 p.m. It's free. When? Saturday. Where? Travel Bug. 839 Paseo de Peralta. No charge. And what do you know about Beats on the Basin?
Nothing.
Well, it's an annual concert series up there on the ski. What do you call that? The ski basin. What do you? That's the ski basin.
It's called the ski basin. Oh, that's what you call the ski basin.
Anyway, from noon
because
to 3.
Because that's what it's called.
From noon to 3, also on Saturday, you can go up there and hear the Santa Fe All-Stars play. If you get a lift ticket, you take a lift to the mid-mountain and you walk over. Otherwise, you can hike up from the lower area. No charge. I understand we're going to get some snow Sunday, but not on Saturday. So. And I do want to mention that there's going to be a discussion by Gene Youngblood, who we have a Q&A with in today's Passatiempo, courtesy of Paul Weideman, called Succession from the Broadcast, the Worldwide Migration to Media Counterculture. And he'll be speaking at 2 p.m. Sunday at St. Francis Auditorium, which is in the New Mexico Museum of Art, 476-5072, and there ain't no charge for that.
Yay!
Now, here's an interesting discussion. Cathedrals, Droughts, and the Flail of God. What do you make of that?
You tell me.
Well, Brian Egan, he's an anthropologist, which means he digs up dinosaurs. He's over there for the School for Advanced Research at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday.
What's his last name?
Egan, E-G-A-N. Do you know him?
You go ahead. I have somebody else from, if that's the right spelling, then I've got somebody else on my show next week, but go ahead.
Well,
a similar name.
He's with the School for Advanced Research, and he'll be speaking 7:30 p.m. Thursday at the James A. Little on Cathedrals, Droughts, and the Flail of God.
No, it's Brian Fagan, and I have his book right here called The Long Summer, How Climate Changed Civilization.
So are you telling me Pastor Tempo has his name wrong?
Yes, I am.
That's possible. If it is, we apologize. But nonetheless, it's happening 7:30 p.m. Thursday, and it's free.
It's possible.
We weren't doing so well today. Everything was going straight forward. There was no antics, no shtick, no insulting. Now it starts. We make mistakes. We are human. I am really sorry.
Craig, you're waving your hands.
I was probably wishing you could
wave. I think they're two different lectures, actually.
Yeah. Are they?
Yes, they're two different lectures.
It could be we're right at Brian Egan, so there.
So there's Brian Egan and there's Brian Fagan.
And we don't get the names
both
wrong.
Both involved with the School for Advanced Research,
maybe we're
both talking about
wrong.
The same thing. Go ahead.
Oh, good Lord.
All right, what time is it?
It's 8:48.
I was supposed to sing a song to somebody today. I don't know if I'm going to. The Santa Fe Concert Association Dance Series presents the St. Petersburg Ballet Theater Company. You know what they're doing?
What?
Romeo and Juliet.
Oh.
Now, there's a happy show for you.
15-year-olds in love.
That's true. And they do
all sorts. Who come to a premature demise.
Plus, they die at a young age.
That's what I'm saying.
7:30 p.m. Wednesday at the Lenzic, 988-1234. Oddly enough, that same evening, the Photographic Society of Santa Fe will get together to talk about their prince, P-R-I-N-T-S, not their royal.
Handsome prince.
That's right. It's open to the public at 7 p.m. at the Ghost Ranch of Santa Fe, which is at 401 Old Tiles Highway. It's free. Ghost Ranch of Santa Fe is where all those big bear and elephant sculptures are across from the back of the Federal.
Those are cool.
I love those. Wouldn't it be fun to climb on one of those and get your picture taken?
Have you tried?
I've gone there and I've gotten on top of them, but then nobody's around to take my picture.
I'll go.
But then I need a ladder to get down. You ever try sliding down an elephant's backside? I rode a camel once in Saudi Arabia. It was terrible. I was holding on to the hump. They also call them dromedaries or dromaturgs or something.
Camels have one hump. Dromedaries have two.
All right. Well, he had one hump. What was I riding?
Camel.
All right. So I was riding, but I sort of fell off, and he started running fast across the desert. So, like, I was holding on the hump, and he was like, bang. It was terrible, and people took video of this. They tried to get it on American Home Videos like 10 years ago before I was famous. Thank God it didn't make it. What was I talking about?
I have not the foggiest notion.
I thought I was talking about something to do with camels. Anyway, I was talking about the elephant over at the Ghost Ranch.
Oh, right.
Why do you extemporate me and get me off the subject? If you want to go to an all-ages swing dance.
The coining of a new verb, extemporate, by Robert Knott. You heard it here first.
It's on Saturday night. I'm trying so hard to be nice. 8 o'clock is a lesson. 9 o'clock is dancing. It's at the Odd Fellows Hall, 1125 Cerrillo Short. It's very inexpensive to get in. We don't mention prices on KSFR, your public radio station. 101.5 FM.
Do you have to try hard to be nice?
No, I'm usually a very sweet, likable person who likes to just have a little bit of fun. And I come on here and somehow I get messed up when I don't think about what I say and I use the wrong verbiage. And then I find myself with, you know, being extradited or something.
But I give you a hard time just out of affection. Hey, last chance to dance this Saturday, February 2nd from 8 to 12 at the gym at Pueblo de Abiquiú, and it's the debut of local country band US 84, and it's a dance and scholarship benefit for the 2008 high school graduating class. For more information, 685-4884 for those of our listeners who are listening up from the Abiquiú area.
Also, fancy footwork, ballroom and Latin dancing, 7:30 p.m. on Thursday. At the dance station.
Hey, not to mention on Friday night and Saturday night, tomorrow night, the Mambo Room at Cloud Cliff.
Hey, Mambo.
That's
over
it.
At the Mambo Room. What time?
Let me look.
And how much do people have to pay?
Well, we don't talk about that.
Well, is there an admission fee, or do they get in for free?
No, there's an admission fee, and it is here is the notice. It is tomorrow. It is at Cloud Cliff on 2nd Street, and it's from 9:30 to 1 o'clock. Hey, and it's with DJ Timbalero, who is wonderful.
Okay, wonderful. Meanwhile, in terms of music tonight, let's say you want to go to Chispa del Mesón. The Three Faces of Jazz are playing at 8 o'clock, and it is free. Let's say you want to go over to Dinner for Two on Guadalupe. Pablo Champion's playing, 7 o'clock, and it's free. Let's say you want to go to the Green Palace Tea House at 8 o'clock and hear Jim Tur play. Very minimal cover. Jim's an interesting character, and I like the way he plays guitar. He does some interesting songs. He does a song called, give me a second, I got to think about it.
I don't know that one. Can you hum a few bars?
It's something like painted.
Craig Smith, can you help us?
I can't help you with that, but I wanted to just mention something. We were talking about criticism earlier in theater. I'm just going to throw this in for an advance. The Lensic has taken on to doing much more presenting, and they have three plays coming up. February 22nd, Orson Welles' Moby Dick Rehearsed.
Oh, I'm going to try to get those folks on the air.
Great. March 12th, James Baldwin's Sonny's Blues. And April 11th and 12th, Joe Spano in R. Buckminster Fuller, The History and Mystery of the Universe. So there's lots of outside plays coming in, as well as the bench warmers this weekend.
That's right. I think Alenzi is trying to step up and bring in some outside shows. What was I talking about before I was misinterpreted? Oh, so Saturday. Let's say it's Saturday and you want to go out. Noche de Flamencos at Chispa, 7 o'clock Saturday. You got to pay on that. And meanwhile, at El Farol, it's Latin night with Nosotros. They
Yay.
Are great to dance
They're
to
great
Saturday
to dance
night
to.
At El Farol.
Not a big dance floor, but it,
no,
it gets packed.
No, that's one of my complaints about that. That's my complaint about many venues here. What's the best dance floor in town in your
Well,
view?
That's what I want to ask you. I mean, the Paramount was so great because they had a wonderful dance floor over at Bar B. Sometimes they had dancing over there. Now that the Paramount is no longer there, what has filled up the need for trash disco, you know, house? I mean, any kind of music, hip-hop. Where do you go dancing if you want to? Techno. Where do you go dancing if you want to do those things?
My left foot just fell asleep.
That's not where you go. Craig, where do you go? Robert, where do you go?
I think the El Dorado's trying to have that dance floor become a hot spot. I love La Fonda, but it's such a small, like by the third song, there's no, you can't even do a two-step because there's like no room.
You can't even do a one-step.
It's very good.
Thank you.
You know?
So you just stand there in a can of sardines. No, but I mean,
what about the Mambo Room?
Okay, but that's Latin. But I mean, for the kind of dancing that used to actually happen at the Paramount.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Go down to Evangelos and try to dance there when they have a Dixieland jazz band like Santa Fe Chili's. It's really
that's interesting.
Tough.
I don't know where you go to find industrial or techno.
That's what I'm talking about. There's plenty of more in the sort of, you know, blues and country
C&W.
And
for clog dancing or folk dancing.
Now, what about Fusion? I haven't been there since it became Fusion.
That may be a possibility. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any opinions on this or knowledge about this more than I do, would you please write to radiocafe@ksfr.org and let me know, and we will talk about it on future programs.
What time is it?
You can be anonymous if you want. 8:55.
Okay, that's pretty good. Do you remember a month ago when I sang that song Seattle on the air?
I do remember it distinctly.
Well, somebody kind of intimated that no such song exists, and I just wanted to talk about it and sing a few bars of it today. Is that right?
It does, in fact, exist because I found it on the internet.
It was written for the TV show Here Come the Brides by Ernest Shelton and Jack Keller and Hugo Montenegro. Remember that TV series? No, you were too young.
No, I was too young.
Joan Blondell was in it, and Bobby Goldsboro was in the show, so they let him sing it. But Perry Como took the song.
Now your eyes are lighting up. I love this part of the show.
Well, I just sing a few bars, and Perry Como took the song.
This is where you let the crazy relative out of the attic.
And he made a big hit of it.
But we love him so.
It's a fun song. You need the instrumental behind you so that it sounds good. But I just want to reiterate.
I wish I could imitate the violins.
That's okay. So can I do a few of the lyrics?
Yes, you can. I don't know. Can you?
Okay, it goes like this. And first there's a little intro, and it goes, do 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 do. The bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle.
I've heard this song.
And the hills are greenest green in Seattle. Like a beautiful child growing free, growing wild, full of hopes and full of fears, full of laughter, full of tears, full of dreams to last the years in Seattle, in Seattle. Here comes a good part. When it's time to leave your home and your loved one, well, that's the hardest thing a boy could ever do. Still you pray that you will find someone warm and sweet and kind, but you just don't know who's waiting there for you. Then it goes back to the bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle, and the hills the greenest green in Seattle. Like a beautiful child, growing free and growing wild, full of hopes and full of fears, full of laughter, full of tears, full of dreams to last the years in Seattle. Then the background.
I would like to point out the comedy in singing in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
It's just simply an untrue statement.
Well, remember, the show was set in 1882. Things were better then.
Oh, yeah, things were different then.
Well, Bigfoot was out in one of those shows. I have to go see a movie about Bigfoot today. It's called Strange Wilderness.
You can't be serious.
No, he is serious.
It's your dream come true.
Well, you would think so.
Yes.
Hey, it was good being on your show.
It was great to have you. Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Craig Smith, who is still here to our great delight, is a staff writer and classical music critic. And no, you guys are great, man. And it's wonderful to have you.
Pasatiempo, pick it up.
It's in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and Robert Knott is here just about every Friday from approximately 8:30 till 9, speaking of the arts. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Now, I had somebody say the other day, I don't know how to podcast. You don't have to know how to podcast. All you do is go to santafe.radiocafe.org and click on today's show or on any other show, and you can look for shows in the little search section by putting in things like Robert Knott and seeing what comes up. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, Jazz a la Carta. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Bacon Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao, Robert.
Bye. Thank you.
Adios.